Detailing America, where answer today is MDs are medical assassins, with my special guest, Jennifer Daniels, MD. And before the break, you were talking about all the different considerations a doctor has to make when they all of a sudden realize, because we have our moments. I'm going to talk about my moment when I realized they're killing people. I was a second-year surgery resident in the surgical ICU at Kings County Hospital. I mean, we had like 18 beds. It was a horror show when you're on call. You're up all night, and people were just so sick. And there was one particular time when somebody, you know, pretty much went into cardiac arrest, and a code was called, and I watched my chief resident inject the drugs into the pillow. And I couldn't believe my eyes. Now, I knew, you know, the mortality rate. You know, most people didn't survive being in this ICU. First and foremost, it was like an infection incubator. But when I saw him do this, and I, you know, confronted him afterwards in private, of course, and I said to him, I saw you injecting the drugs into the pillow. Why did you do that? And he said, oh, the patient was going to die anyways. And, you know, I was horrified by that, because to me that was aiding and abetting, you know, which...
Well, I think what you missed is another twist to that.
Okay.
I was a resident, and we had those cold blues, and I'd been to 5 in a row, and I watched very carefully, and the resident or attending, whoever, injected the drugs into the line and gave it to the patient, and 5 out of 5 died.
Right.
So I thought, I wonder what would happen if I did absolutely nothing. And so the next time the alarm went off, I was the most senior resident in the hospital. So I ran there. I got there first. And so the nurse said, what should we do? I said, take a blood pressure. Okay, doctor, I took a blood pressure. Of course, it wasn't any blood pressure, right? No heartbeat. Or this is sporadic pulsating stuff, right? And so I told someone, well, you know, give him some oxygen and take another blood pressure. And let's check this and check that and check. We didn't do anything. Didn't give him a single drug, and he lived.
Mm-hmm.
So... What I decided then was that the whole advanced cardiac life support drama or theater was a theatrical production, and all it did was pull out a $5,000 cart, use up another $1,000 worth of drugs, and allow a nice terminal $10,000 bill for the final send-off.
Right.
But there's no evidence in my mind that that ritual saved anybody's life at all.
Well, let me just say, I totally agree with you, but it was just the idea at the time that we were taught that this is what you do in a certain situation, and that
exactly.
The chief resident
articulated to you that patient that he had seen this and giving these drugs was simply adding torture to what could be a peaceful passing.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't that articulate.
Right. It's another way to look at it, but I'm just saying. That I just started to see things that were being done, and they were evil. There was no question in my mind that they were evil, and the more that you see, you know, eventually there comes a point where you say, I'm not going to be part of this anymore. I'm not going to do this. So
exactly.
any other things on your list as to why the MD...
I have a list of like 50 things. If you want me to take a break and talk about what I perceive to be the solution to this, and then we can go back to the incredible endless list.
Oh, sure. I love solutions. Let's do solutions. Good.
I'm totally into solutions, and I'm totally against government regulation of any kind. So my solutions are all very simple. And I don't even think we need to educate the public necessarily. But
Okay, wait. What a teaser. Okay. We're going to a break. We'll be back after these messages. And yes, what a wonderful idea. Basically, in my opinion, it's like, give the true result of what's going on. We're supposedly a capitalist country. If we really were capitalists, then natural healers would be able to be part of the mix. All right, we'll be right back. And we're back with Blood Healing America. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. And before the break, you were talking about solutions to basically causing the death of medicine, which has been my goal. So please do share.
Okay, there's two solutions. One is what you mentioned or alluded to, which is countries where if a patient dies, it can be determined that the death was as in any part due to the doctor's medication he prescribed or therapy administered, and that doctor goes to jail for murder. And here in Panama, we have 12 doctors who were jailed 2 years ago. They were jailed because their patients got MRSA while hospitalized and died.
Excellent. Excellent. As it should be, that they should be charged with murder. And I was referring to this case in Brazil, which I had sent to you, that a doctor...
Now, that case was different because she deviated from the standard of care.
Right. She actually killed
them. She hastened to death. She killed these people before the medical system could maximize its profits. And so she is not the kind of arrest we're talking about. We're talking about people, I'm talking about people who are doctors who adhere to the standard of care, and as a result of that adherence, the patient died. And that is what's going on here in Panama. So in Panama, if you adhere to the standard of care and a patient dies, the doctor has no malpractice protection. Death, because of what you did, it's murder, you go to jail for murder. That's it. Nothing complicated. And so the drug companies now are paying very prominent doctors to develop and lobby for a whole malpractice code in the law. And that has been in process now for at least 4 years. Very prominent doctors. And these are well-meaning doctors who are being deceived. What they are being told by Big Pharma is that if we have malpractice law in place, then we can have scientifically proven protocols that are healthy for people, and we can have a way of inspecting what doctors do to make sure they stick to these proven, life-giving, healthy protocols. And
which is obviously a scam, because how can Big Pharma talk about life-saving protocols? I suspect there's payoffs going on where that's
quite
even
a bit,
being...
Quite a bit. Quite a few. And the payoffs are of the most innocent kind. Because, again, these doctors are very naive. They haven't delved into it to the point of reading package inserts and looking at research. And they're believing what they're being told. Because this is coming from a, you know, Anglo large corporation who is bringing respectability to the profession. And so that this is they're blinded by that. But once you get a malpractice code in place, the doctor is totally insulated from the death of his patients. Totally insulated. And even if he does deviate from the standard of care, the only satisfaction the patient has is a malpractice dollar amount payoff.
Right.
If he does stick to the standard of care, there is no satisfaction. Your loved one is dead, and it's just too bad. And so it insulates the doctor from patient death, whether he adheres to or deviates from the standard of care.
Right. And, of course, those settlements usually also come with a gag clause so that you're not allowed to discuss the case. And so it doesn't get out there what's really going on. Wait, I'm losing track of the solutions.
That's one solution. I'm in favor of that solution.
Yes.
And I think that solution might be, in the eyes of most Americans, too harsh. So I'm even willing to go for a more lenient one.
Okay.
And this is a lenient solution. And this addresses, actually, it can be applied to Big Pharma, it can be applied to a hospital, or it can be applied to a doctor. It works in it either way. So we know, for example, that the average doctor is involved in about 16 murders a year. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that certain drugs, like Viax, for example, Viax led to 135,000 heart attack deaths per year.
Right.
Not per year, but during the time that it was out there. So how do we handle this? I say we handle it with empathy. And what we say is that one employee of that company who's worked for that company for at least 2 years must report on the following Monday for a 20-year sentence without parole for every 20 people who die from any drug.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 20 deaths, no penalty. Mm-hmm. Let it slide. For example, Viax murdered 136,000 people that took the drug. So you divide 20 into 136,000, then that company who manufactured that drug would have to have 680 employees on the following Monday after the determination report to prison. And that could be Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, Leavenworth, or Attica, something, you know, appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
The murder of 20 people. And 20 years of parole.
And, of course, while they're in prison, they should be under the medical standard of care. That goes without saying. Of course.
No, that's not the important part. The important part is each incarceration must be publicized.
Mm-hmm.
And the person's name, their position with the company, how they were selected to serve, you know, was there a committee in the company that selected them to serve or whatever, and news coverage of them reporting to their sentence has to be done. We need a reality TV show of their time in Guantanamo or whichever prison is determined. This is very important to publicize this so people know that if you are working to manufacture a vaccine, to package a vaccine, to market the vaccine, to deliver the vaccine, at whatever level in this chain you are involved, you are responsible for that murder.
Exactly.
And so,
yes, and of course, this should be happening with the financial criminals on Wall Street, the banksters as well.
Let's just start with these medical criminals
yeah.
who we know are murdering at least 800,000 people a year. That's
yeah.
a pretty big number. It's about a third of all deaths in the United States. Let's start with that, kind of get it refined, and then if we think we'd like to add it, expand it to the financial criminals, well, we can.
Right.
But I think this would put a serious dent in things, and I think people would get a more comprehensive understanding. For example, the drug rep that comes to me, calls on me, and basically tells me to prescribe a drug, and I know that what he's telling me is the standard of care, and he knows that I know this, and he knows that I have to do what he's telling me, or I'm going to get in big trouble. That drug rep should feel, hey, wait a minute, I'm murdering people. I'm a part of this.
Mm-hmm.
And if he goes to work for a drug company, when he goes to work, he has to sign a form saying he understands that in the event the drug company is found guilty of a crime of producing a drug that has murdered more than 20 people, that an employee who has 2 years or more seniority will be selected to serve a 20-year sentence, and he may be selected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
That's excellent.
I think that would solve everything. Everyone gets 20 free deaths, you know, so we're not being harsh here. And when they do have to serve time, they're only getting 1 year for each person they murdered. Not compassionate here, but I think it'll solve the problem.
Excellent.
And we're not going to find, no, don't find a drug company, no fines, no fines. No fines.
And why are you saying no fines?
Because the fines are essentially a bribe. The government levies these fines go to the government.
Yeah.
And so these fines amount to paying for permission to kill. And we don't want to send a message that a human life has a price to it. We don't want to say, okay, you can pay $1,000 for each person who died. And so now we have the drug companies doing this financial math, like with the ADHD drugs that are murdering our children and causing them to commit
right.
suicide and homicide.
Yeah,
They
have an actuary figure out how many people can they settle with after they harm them versus how much can they potential do they have.
Right, so how many sales do we need to make from this drug in order to make it worthwhile so we can pay the penalties? But if you make it a non-financial penalty, then you take that totally out of the mix.
Right.
And that's important. And Americans need to stop allowing the system to put a dollar on their lives. And that's why people are being murdered, by the way. And I talk about this in my archives. I had to talk on hospitals. And these are old numbers because of inflation. So these are numbers from like 2008. When someone goes into a hospital, they have a procedure done, and they come out alive. On average, the hospital gets $12,000 per admission with the patient's discharged alive.
Wow.
The patient goes into a hospital, experiences complications, and is discharged in a pine box, a casket, to the morgue. On average, the hospital gets $45,000.
Mm-hmm.
And the ratio, by the way, has not changed. So when you are murdered in a hospital, the hospital gets four times as much as when you are discharged alive. And this is why hospitals are turning a blind eye to this murder. They know it's going on. And hospitals keep stats on their doctors. They know how many deaths each doctor has every year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just said, the thing is, everyone's keeping these numbers. Everybody's watching. Everyone's calculating their profits. And it's only the naive patient who believes this is an accident.
Right.
And
right.
you've worked in the hospital, so you know, for example, you know which doctors are just dangerous. Like, oh, man, I wouldn't let him cut me. Oh, he's so dangerous. He cuts you, man, you die. Everybody knows that, right? And so they're talking about doing research about hospitals being dangerous and how to make them safer, which is utter complete nonsense. It's stonewalling. And I even wrote a comic strip about it. Want to hear my comic strip?
Sure.
This lady, obviously uneducated, sitting behind a nurse's station, and she's a clerk. And she says, uh-oh, she's got this order. It's her job to transcribe the order and send it to pharmacy. He says, uh-oh, Dr. Nogood just ordered that antibiotic kill 'em all. That patient's a goner. And so the nurse is standing in front of the nurse's station and says, well, aren't you going to call administration and let them know? And then the clerk says, what? You trying to get me fired? And the nurse says, oh, what a stressful job. I was just trying to avoid having to give that medicine.
Wow. Yeah. And there goes the compassion of the staff.
Everybody knows. The clerk knows, the nurse knows, the doctor knows, the hospital administration knows. Everybody knows.
Yep. Okay, there's the music again. We'll be back after these messages. Feel free to call in again, folks. I'd ask to hold off the second hour. If you have any comments or questions for Dr. Daniels, we'll be right back. And we're back with Hailing America. My guest today is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, who's presently in Panama because the New York State Medical Mafia decided she had done the wrong thing by healing people. And I just wanted to add one other thing to your list of things that need to be done, is that the psychopaths who work within these medical boards who torment people like us, they need to be held accountable for their actions. Because, you know, as you said, how much you spent in your medical board hearings, I didn't have any money to spend because I had spent 7 years in seven courts trying to save my son. So I went there by myself. They wouldn't even, I had an attorney there as an legal advisor, they wouldn't even let him in the room. And here I'm accused of having a mental illness, a delusion of conspiracy. But what these people have done, and it's all documented in transcripts, and I'm sure you have yours as well, there's no place to go, because every aspect, if you go to the appellate board within the medical mafia, you know, they're controlled by the government as well. So they're all government stooges. And, you know, the program is to keep people sick and keep them going to hospitals and doctors and basically not let people realize that there's natural solutions to everything. And I'm sure that, you know, for you, go ahead.
I think it's a bigger, it's a little bigger picture than that.
Okay.
I think the whole health situation that you've outlined is simply one phalanx or one branch of the government's effort to totally control the lives of U.S. citizens and make them feel helpless and totally dependent. In order to do that, you have to, and this is what they do, they totally exempt from any liability at all any individual who does the bidding of government. And as licensed physicians murdering people, it's difficult, it was for us to see that we were just tools in that whole arena. And then the licensing board's job really is to take out doctors who fail to fulfill their grisly mission as assassins. So
Right. They
are doing exactly as they are charged to do.
Right.
They're not acting independently.
Right. And that's what my goal is, to get people to realize that. You know, Like I said, people have to stand with the doctors who are risking everything to help them and to tell the truth. It just is really mind-boggling to me how people don't get it. You know, I have people tell me all the time, oh, I feel so sorry for you. Oh, great. You know, that's not going to help anything. You know, people have to, spread the word, whatever they're led to do.
Well, let's help them. Let's give them a little bit of help here, okay? I'm giving them some help.
Okay.
There's one thing in America that makes people extremely poor and keeps them very sick, and that's called health insurance. If people drop their health insurance, they'd be more than able to reward doctors who are not murdering them. And when you pay your health insurance premium, you are paying in advance for your own murder, and you are making sure that whoever murders you gets paid handsomely. That's what you're doing.
Right. And so, I'm sure you're aware of the present situation here in the States, this ridiculous Obamacare, where they're now going to try to force people to get insurance. And what I tell people is, I haven't had insurance for 15 years. I do my own stuff, natural things. I will pay the fee, the tax, whatever they want to call it, the extortion, in order
exactly.
to not get insurance and do exactly as you're saying. Because what's going to happen is people are going to be mandated to get vaccines to keep their insurance and get
exactly.
a mammogram.
Exactly, not only that.
Yep,
now they have courts mandating medical care. And without a payment mechanism in place, the courts could not be free to mandate medical care. But
yep.
now they mandate, everyone has coverage. Now the courts can say, okay, you've got to take this pill, and submit to this surgery, and because there's a way to pay for it. Whereas before, a patient could say, or a person in court could say, I have no way of paying for this, judge. You going to pay for this? Scratch that sentence. So it limited the amount the state could intrude in someone's life. And now, the judge can literally sentence the patient, the person in court, sentence them to submitting to torture and even murder.
Right.
As their sentence.
Right. And let me just say, and I'm sure that you're aware of this as well, that there's actually a situation in California. Hold on a second. I have to find this. I have so many papers in front of me. There's a law that if a patient has received conventional treatment and is not responding, the doctor mm-hmm. cannot prescribe a change in diet rather than additional medication, lest the doctor lose their license, be fined, and possibly go to jail.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's how bad it is.
And
okay.
I think, though, I mean, you can think of that as good or you can think of that as bad. It seems to me a law like that would help doctors kind of wake up and say, wait, something's
yeah.
going on here.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's amazing. One of my funniest stories I heard from one of my clients was a woman that I taught her how to reverse her breast cancer. And she had gone to Sloan Kettering before she found out about me. And she was telling the oncologist that she had started to eat an organic, you know, alkaline diet. And he actually mm-hmm. told her that that was witchcraft.
Exactly. That's right. It's witchcraft.
I know. It's hilarious.
Boy.
Okay. There's the music. We've got callers lining up. Hold on, folks. I'll start bringing you on after the break. I'm so excited to have Dr. Daniels be telling you what I've been telling you. It's time for us to do something because they're killing us, folks. And that is their job. We'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Back with Sailing America. We have Dr. Jennifer Daniels on the line with us. Let's start taking some calls. Kathy from Massachusetts. Are you there, Kathy?
I'm here, and I'm very grateful that you took my call. I relocated back to Massachusetts due to a root canal filled tooth that the head of the oral surgery department canceled the CT, and it ended up eating. I have a part of my cheekbone missing. But due to the iatrogenic nature, I found it very difficult once I got back here where there's, you know, more access to physicians and safety nets because I can't afford to cash pay. I'm sorry, but I just can't. I found the iatrogenic nature made it very difficult for me to get care here. So I find this show very interesting. I don't typically listen to your show, so I'm very grateful I caught it. And I just wonder, right now I'm working on the diagnosis of sinus tract infection, okay? They've done a biopsy. I don't have the biopsy results yet back, but I have just been through absolute, it's a miracle I didn't end up homeless because of trying to get care after an iatrogenic error. And I put into the computer one day, I said, I feel like a medical dissident. And when I searched out on StartPage, I came up with the Dutch Society for Medical Dissidents webpage, and I printed that opening page. I've now printed, there are three articles. And when I showed that, I said, okay, look, I'm calling the bluff. This is what's going on. You're not wanting to take charge of the case because this is a, you know, iatrogenic error. And I presented that page, and that's when the ball started rolling for me to try to get, you know, they started basically listening to me, was I called their bluff. And I highly recommend that, you know, patients print that web page and
mm-hmm.
maybe take it into their follow-up.
Okay, well, thank you for that. But the only problem with that could be that they're going to take retribution against you, and your life is in their hands. So that's the only thing I would point out.
I am well aware of that. I was a little afraid almost to even call in today because I pushed back against this corruption. I have been a type 1 diabetic since 1965. I am 50. I am a death defier. I have been killed by doctors. I convulsed when I was pregnant at age 8. I was 18. Didn't take the pill, you know, blah, blah, blah. I was married young, right out of high school. They told my parents I would be dead by 17. I have never had laser on my retinas. My microalbumin is perfect. I am a walking miracle, and that word has been used, you know, miracle has been used here in Boston, all right, in the premier elite places.
Right.
So
until, wait. We're running out of time quickly. Until a dentist used the proper standard of care, because what he did is okay, because the very idea of a root canal, and I have too before I knew what root canals were actually involved with, is killing the nerve, pulling it out, and bonding the canal that's left. Now, if there's any bacteria in there at all, you are a walking time bomb. And obviously,
I know that. I've had 17 root canals, and they all started failing, and then the cyst opened up, and they were going to CT this. The cyst to see if it was connected to a root canal tooth that broke off. And the big shot guy in charge of the other woman canceled the CT. Once I got to Boston, they found out that I have basically part of my cheekbone missing. I mean, this is just, it's a freaking nightmare. So I totally understand the root canal things, but these were done 30 years ago. And I'm just wondering if your doctor, guess, has any thoughts on this, any coping strategies.
Yeah, sure, Dr. Daniels, chime in. I mean, dental malpractice and total insanity is just as common as medical, but, you know.
Yeah, or surgery.
The standard of care. I mean, this whole giving fluoride, which causes fluorosis and actually worsens teeth and sets the patient up to, you know, fund your retirement fund is just one more example. But the question is, what should she do in her particular situation? I think her first mistake is seeing her teeth as separate from the rest of her body. That is a huge, huge error. The only reason we have dentists and doctors is just to split profit. Okay, so you have one body. You don't have a tooth problem. You have a body problem. Let's just presume for a moment that you're having low-grade infections of your root canal deteriorating your bone, let's just say. It sounds to me like that's what's going on. If that's what's going on, then what you really need is a cleansing program. You need to start clearing out your bottom end, clearing out your liver, getting all that clear. And what you're going to find is those infections will actually leave your tooth and your dental area. Then you need to strengthen your tooth and the bond that your remaining teeth have to your mouth, and you can do that with gelatin and boron.
Right,
and let
me also say that there are wonderful charts. I'm sure you can get them online. As Dr. Daniel said, each tooth is actually aligned with a different organ system. It's much like iridology or reflexology. So you can have problems in your body because there's a problem in a tooth or vice versa. So I totally agree with what she's saying. Oil pulling is another excellent thing you might want to check out.
Yes, I've done that. Thank you so much for your input, and I appreciate you. I'm telling you, you have no idea. I'm just like, oh, my God, I was supposed to hear this today. It's just, I even know the word iatrogenic, and you should see the look on the doctor's face when you use that word in an appointment. They just almost fall over.
Well, guess what? Everything is iatrogenic. Everything is iatrogenic when you get down to it, and that's my message. Okay, thank you for your call, Kathy. Lark from Texas, are you there?
Oh, hi there. Can you hear me okay, Dr. Carley?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, I was thinking just the other day, in 1906, we had the Pure Food and Drug Act, which equated all Americans to animals or to livestock. And we had the Flexner Report in 1909. And then I was drawing attention to earlier research where I realized after reading the Lincoln Push, PUTSCH, America's Bolshevik Revolution, the American Civil War was in fact a communist revolution won by the communists. And then I started thinking about what Rabbi Stephen Wise said in 1935 in the American Bulletin. You call it Marxism, I call it Judaism. So So my question to you ladies is this. Are we not living on one big cattle ranch, a la a slave plantation, and we're the cattle?
Well, yes, that's pretty obvious, and actually, that's always my message to people of color, is that we're all slaves now. We're all being genocided. It's one big Tuskegee Institute, okay? So, you know, they're trying to divide and conquer us, and that's why we have to come together with anything that we can hold in common as an important issue. And if health isn't at the top of the list, I don't know what is. But yes, that's totally true, and it's been very incremental, and we've talked about this issue on shows before. But let me give Dr. Daniels an opportunity to respond.
If you go to my site, there's a show in my archives called Humans, the New Cash Crop. And it really just talks about how from conception people are actually being farmed. So the first thing I would say was definitely take a look at that. The next thing I would say is you need to understand that any bill that you're paying every single month is part of your farming process. In other words, your electric bill, your rent, your health insurance premium, these are all forms of farming. And the way to avoid being on the farm is to find a way to avoid these bills, to fulfill those needs in other ways. But that's the way you can detect farming.
Right.
You mean to tell me that a citizen's arrest isn't going to cut it?
Right. Won't cut it. No way. Mm-mm.
Right.
I appreciate your efforts, ladies. Thanks so much for the program today.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Yeah, and there's many ways to go off the grid, and you know, obviously something's getting ready to happen. We can tell that. I mean, when the president signed an executive order that he can kill Americans with drones, I mean, you know, that's when you basically take the temperature of the slave work units out there and you say, okay, most of them are dead. You know, how can that not shock people and say, go ahead.
I want to say that I actually did a strong suit having an MBA and doing a financial analysis. And so the profit margin in the healthcare industry, especially hospitals, is less than 5%. So it only takes 5% of Americans to refuse hospitalization of any kind, and the system will collapse. So this is not a revolution that's going to require even the cooperation of 50% or even 25% of Americans. If even as few as 8% of Americans wake up and do things differently, the system will just simply evaporate like some hologram or apparition.
Right.
And so people need to understand, and that's how fragile the system is, and that's why the executive in chief needs to sign orders concerning drones and concerning things, because the level of non-cooperation or non-conformity required to end all this is actually very low.
Right. And that's the good news, and that's why I just can't say how excited I was to find you again and hear you speaking the whole truth, which is what we must do. We must call it as it is. Doctors are assassins, period. Not only are they assassins, but that's what's expected of them. And I just want to mention, I read my local Charlotte Observer newspaper every day just to see what they're feeding the sheep. And there was a little snippet in there today about how the Caremont Regional Medical Center's new tagline is now cheat death, instead of something about health, you know? So I just found that hilarious.
You can die for less. Okay, nice.
Right.
Yeah.
So I just found that hilarious. They're getting so desperate, you know,
but what they're doing is they're being more obvious. They're bolder about it. Oh, this is a hospital. This is the place we murder you. We're going to murder you for less. And they feel people are so asleep that they can talk to them this way. People should be insulted. I don't know.
Right. And I just wanted to also bring up the idea of hospice. I don't know if they have that in Panama, but I have had some amazing experiences. Especially hospice nurses that call me and tell me, you know, it's starting to bother them that doctors are writing orders, especially for, you know, morphine, which makes the patient stop breathing and things of that nature. And they don't want to do it. And so my answer is, so then why don't you stop doing it? I mean, you know, it's very simple, actually. But
because they have these monthly bills to pay, and this is another thing on my list.
Right. The doctor's bills are urgent and immediate. The patient's death is remote and it's a probability, but his doctor's
right.
bills are a certainty. So he
right.
puts that over the life of the patient, and that's what she's doing.
So when your children someday grow up and realize what you've done and ask you, what did they pay you to sell your soul, I hope it was, you know, a nice amount.
No, the parents say they paid me enough to feed you. They paid me enough to feed you, and that's going to be the answer.
Okay, well, I got a problem with that. But anyways, I just wanted to bring up, I've actually had two calls now from people in different parts of the country where now they're, because you were talking about how they're getting bold now, two people who had, you know, a family member that was in hospice, and the hospice called both of these people and told them, you know, if you want to say goodbye to grandma, make sure you're here by Tuesday the 28th or whatever, because, you know, that's when you have to come to say goodbye, by that date. So, in other words, we're going to kill grandma on the 29th or whatever.
That's the way our billing is maximized. Our revenue is maximized if grandma dies on the 28th at 2 p.m. And so that's when grandma's going to get the special dose. Yep.
I know. And see, to me, it's so amazing because I was so naive when I first started out in this field. It was my dream come true. I always wanted to be a doctor. My family's very poor. Never dreamed it could ever happen. I went the long way. Went, you know, first I was an x-ray tech, then a sonographer, and then I got into medical school. But the point is that, it was probably, well, I've had two dark nights in my soul, and this was one of them, when I actually had to face reality as to what's going on, with the entire medical profession. It was so overwhelming. You know, tears for months. I mean, I just couldn't believe it, but there it was. I knew it was true. There was no belief involved.
Now, I want to point out, I was on the medical school admissions committee in Syracuse, and it was my job to pick who was going to go into medical school, right? Who's going to have the honor of becoming a doctor. And one thing I noticed, it hit me like a ton of bricks, as I was going through these woefully deficient, shockingly bland human beings, that we were selecting for the naive, for the credulous, and for the true believers. The whole admissions process is geared towards that, to get someone who has put their brain asleep, who has totally given themselves over to this worship of this position. And it is that person who is most likely to do what needs to be done to be a good assassin.
Right. Well, not only that, another thing is we all know about the nepotism in medical school and other universities.
Oh, God.
Right. So basically,
something else that happened on the committee. I was on the committee, and this person's application came up. This person was obviously totally unfit to be a doctor. Their essay, everything screamed, and it was just like, no way. But this person's father was a very popular doctor, extremely helpful to other doctors. And so we took the vote, and I voted my conscience, which was a score so low he had no chance of getting admitted. The head of the committee said, now, wait a minute. We all know about Dr. So-and-so. We all know what a great man he was. And we can all think of the favor he's done at least one of us, which was true. He'd done me many favors.
Mm-hmm.
Let's vote again. And this time, I want us to take these things into consideration. And there's a second vote, and I raised my score, and it was enough to get him admitted. But that's what happens to the admissions committee.
Well, let me just say that it's actually worse now. I've actually spoken to a woman who's involved in creating the standardized tests, you know, the MCAT for medical students, the LSAT for law students, et cetera. They're looking for the psychopaths. There are questions they can ask to find the people that don't have a conscience. So
Correct. That's...
situation
Absolutely.
We're dealing with, yeah.
That's right.
So when were you on the admissions committee? What time frame are we talking?
1996, 1997, and 1998.
Okay. And I don't remember the year that the medical mafia went after you, but were you involved in this when they went after you?
No, I just resigned, and that's what people were telling me. If you had still been on that medical school admissions committee, they would not have been able to go after you.
Right.
But I quit the committee because it was interfering with my medical practice. I had to take off an extra day during the week, and, you know, people didn't know if I was going to be here this day or that day. They weren't scheduling appointments because I wasn't there on the admissions day. It was just really messing up my schedule, but I had no idea. But if I had stayed in the committee, supposedly, I never would have been investigated, because then it would have been a conflict of interest, because the system, by investigating me, would have destroyed another credibility arm.
Right. But that was brought up at your hearing, right, that you were actually involved in choosing medical students?
No, it wasn't brought up at my hearing.
Okay. Funny how that works out. Not really. Okay, there's the music, folks. We're going to a break. We'll be back for our last segment. If you have a question, call in. We'll be right back. And we're back with What's Ailing America, where our answer today is MDs are now medical assassins, with my special guest, Dr. Jennifer Daniels. Her website is vitalitycapsules.com. We're getting a request from the board op for you to give your website so that people can directly access your archives.
vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files.
Okay, excellent.
And if people opt in the box there, they'll get a free report, which is remedies so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. These are the remedies I use in my medical practice that allowed me to stop prescribing antibiotics. It also puts you on a list where you get notifications about the radio show.
Definitely. They're asking us to say it again. vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And yes, Dr. Daniels does things a little differently than I do things. Homeopathy is very key to what I do. But the bottom line is there are so many amazing ways that you can heal yourself. The most important part of the healing being to get away from these medical devils. As B.J. Palmer called doctors, he called them medical devils. And how sad is that? For us to have spent all these years, getting an education, hundreds of thousands of dollars of school loans, and time spent away
from murder.
How sad is that? It really is amazing to have to face this. And I just wanted to add another excellent book to the list of books I tell the listeners about. You might want to check this one out as well. Mass Murderers in White Coats, Psychiatric Genocide. The article is Lenny Lapon, L-A-P-O-N. So he gives the whole psychiatric part of this, because, of course, what I realized many years ago is that the whole mental illness thing is a fraud to begin with. Most of these people have either some kind of intoxication, and it can be heavy metals and all kinds of things. Or
deficiency with intoxication, and that's all they have, really. Has nothing to do with what their mother did or didn't say when they were kids or how they were potty trained.
Right. And so this whole field has become not only one of the major killers of the people, but they are used by the system. I had 10 psychologists and psychiatrists examine me when they said I had a delusion. They all found I was fine, in fact, amazingly fine, considering what was going on with my son and everything. And they hired one whore from France, a foreign medical grad, to come in and say, oh, yeah, not only am I delusional about conspiracies, but, you know, I must undergo psychiatric treatment. And that's when I realized my freedom has now come to me, because I'm a teacher. I do not practice medicine. I do not give medical advice. I teach people what I would do if I was they.
And that's what doctors need to understand, is once they leave the killing field, they will feel so free. I have experienced so much incredible happiness, so much balance in my life. I'm closer to my children. I met a very nice man. I'm married to him. I'm happy living in the tropics. Life after medicine is unbelievably wonderful.
Right. Well, definitely keep in touch. Thank you so much for an outstanding show. And I'm just so glad, like I said, to have found you again and to know that you're doing what you're doing, because the truth will win out in the end. There's no question in my mind.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
Hey, bye-bye.